We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome in to The Pod is the Roof, the official UNC basketball podcast for the Field of 68. I'm your host, Riley Davis. I'm joined by my co-host, Jacob Karabatsis. And we have a very special guest. You know, JK, the three of us combined, I think we have over 40 points scored in national championship games. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, yeah. It's like the good old Kobe Bryant meme. You know what I'm saying? 40 of me and you were just over here chilling.
Yeah, we got the 2017 MOP, Carolina legend. Also, for those watching at home, my family listening at home, it's my mom's personal favorite Tar Heel. We have Joel Berry joining us for the first time. So, Joel, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing well. I love that intro, man. Shout out to the moms, man. My mom's a huge Carolina fan as well. That's part of the reason why I went there. So love that intro, but man, I'm glad to be here and glad that you all reached out and, looking forward to chopping it up with you guys.
For sure. JK, how are you doing, man? How's your week been so far?
It's been good, man. It's a little depressing, man, going a week without Carolina hoops. I really haven't been knowing what to do with myself. It kind of makes me scared for the off season, man. Gonna lose my head a little bit, but yeah, we're getting to the nitty gritty now. Got a tough one coming up on Saturday. Got some fire questions for this pod today. I'm looking forward to it, man.
Yeah, same. Like you said, it is it's a bit quiet, a little less stressful not having a game in the middle of the week, especially just because the previous three Tuesdays, too, have just been not particularly enjoyable. Very high stress, low joy experiences. But, you know, I think this Carolina team, they started to figure it out. Well, I should say are starting to get back to how they played during that 10-game stretch against Virginia Tech. And Jacob and I talked about this last week. We still had, you know, some concerns came up over the three losses, but I think we have seen enough of a sample size from this team to believe that they can figure it out, that they can iron out some of the defensive lapses that have pained them a bit in the recent slide. And yeah, we might not see Carolina go back to holding their teams under 30% from three or in the 20s because there is a little bit of luck involved in that. But I think we saw it some against Virginia Tech, the ways they played a little bit more aggressively in their ball defense. They were better at the point of attack. And I think we can see Armando sort of regain some of that steam that he had when he was playing like one of the best rim protectors in the country for a month and a half. But yeah, so far, Joel, we'll get into some of your personal story in a little bit and some of the listeners' questions they submitted on Twitter. But I wanted to get your take on this team and what you've seen from them, what you've liked, what you think could improve upon, any general takes.
Yeah, I think we're at the point of the season where everyone's kind of hitting a groove, right? Players are understanding what the coaches are wanting of them. And you start getting into just understanding how to play right now. And I think we're seeing that. So, you know, part of the defensive lapse is not necessarily that Carolina is dropping off from that point. It could just be that teams are getting better at this point in the season, which you want to see. You don't want to be that same team at the beginning of, or at this point of the season that you were at the beginning of the season. So I think a little bit has to do with that as well, kind of sort of to your point, you know, some luck. Like you have a Syracuse team that shoots 63% from the field. Yeah, you're not gonna win too many ball games doing that. And a lot of those shots were very tough shots. You know, for a Syracuse team, that's not sustainable over the year, which they haven't been putting up those type of percentages. So that, you know, that's just an anomaly. But I think this Carolina team has been playing really well. I love the pieces that they have. You know, RJ Davis is playing at an ACC Player of the Year type of year or caliber, even, you know, Player of the Year for the entire NCAA. I like the pieces that they brought in with Harrison Ingram and Cormac Ryan. Cormac Ryan, hopefully, with the last two games, seems like he's turning the corner, finally starting to find that shot. But the pieces that they have, man, are pretty good. And obviously, I am a huge fan of having bench players and having depth come off the bench. And I think with having Seth Trimble, Jalen Withers, even Jalen Washington coming off the bench, that's the difference maker, being able to have guys that can produce in different ways and different looks without having a big drop off, which I think Carolina had been lacking in the last couple of years. So overall, man, this team, I think they're playing really well. Obviously there is going to be some drop off at the end of the season with, you know, culmination of fatigue and just teams having a better scouting report, seeing a bigger production of plays and whatnot, so being able to scout. But obviously this is a really good team with a lot of maturity. And some of those mistakes that they've had, they have the maturity to be able to make up for them.
I love that. I want to go back to actually something you were saying about Cormac in the his most two recent games. I want to say I saw a stat that through the past three games, even he's something like 10 for 21, maybe from three. Seems like that number's going up in a positive direction. And Joel, I know you had a pretty prolific career shooting the ball at Carolina. I want to say, at least anecdotally, your junior year, you did a lot of that off the ball, senior, or excuse me, on ball shot creating. Senior year, the ball was in Theo's hands more, and you had more catch and shoot opportunities. And you played with some good shooters, with guys like Kenny Williams, who had gone through some slumps as well. Justin Jackson had his moments where his 3-point percentage was well below it was that national championship season. What can you say as far as like the mindset of a shooter, or even speak to what it takes to get comfortable, whether you're maybe playing in a, you know, I think Cormac's usage is probably lower than it was at Notre Dame, and maybe he's getting more like step in, spot up threes, when maybe at Notre Dame he was more used to running off of screens and more actions ran for him. Like, can you speak into that at all, just for the comfort level with that?
And I think, you know, that's part of being able to understand, you know, where a certain player likes the ball delivered. You know, I played with guys, you know, 3, 4 years. So I could almost make a pass with my eyes closed just because I knew where my guys wanted the ball. Justin Jackson, for example, was a curl guy off of screens, off of pin downs. And I could drop it right there at the elbow because I knew he was curling for that floater that no one can block. So, you know, that's part of the chemistry that you have with your players. So for Cormac Ryan coming in from a different system, to your point, you know, at Notre Dame, he was more off the ball a little bit just because that was his role. Now you have Elliot Cadeau and RJ Davis who are, you know, ball dominant. And now you're playing in a lot of spot up situations. And I think I saw a stat. I don't know what the percentage, but I know that he's a lot better being on unguarded shots than guarded shots. So you know that goes into it as well. But man, playing like with a guy like Kenny Williams, the thing that we told him when he got into a funk was shoot the ball. Whenever you get it, shoot it, shoot it, shoot it, and keep shooting it. And I think that's been the message for Cormac Ryan. It's like, man, don't hesitate, man. Just shoot the ball. We brought you here to be a shooter, and that's what you can do. So it seems that he's starting to figure it out, but a lot of it has to do with knowing what spots he likes to shoot the ball, not hesitating when he catches it, and just being ready, being shot ready when you have your opportunity. And so I think a little of that has to go into it. But They will need him to knock down shots, especially if you have a night where RJ Davis isn't hitting or Harrison Ingram, and they need to be able to have that third option from the perimeter. And as we know, perimeter shooting is always essential.
We can, even you mentioned Ingram having an off night, like rare off night against Virginia Tech where he was 0 for 4. It was nice to see those contributions from Cormac. But JK, was there anything in that Virginia Tech game, whether offensively or defensively, that you found particularly encouraging or made you even feel better going into this matchup in Charlottesville?
Well, for starters, the perimeter defense, I know they still gave up 81 points, but like got back in that range that they're comfortable in. Like Virginia Tech shot 27% from three. They did a good job of running them off the 3-point line. They still got to the paint some. They got to the free throw line a lot, like at a shockingly high rate. But I mean, they won by 15. They got back to giving up 81 points, but when the offense gets back up to near 100, you can't really complain. I mean, that's kind of been the issue to me, is that this team's just been like such a slow starter in losses. Like every time they lose, it's typically because a team has them out of rhythm on offense for the first 10 minutes. They're taking bad shots either early in the shot clock or super late in the shot clock. They're not really getting into their offense. And then you'll see it. They start to come back. Like we've talked about this, Riley, in both the Clemson and the Syracuse games, they came back. And then at that point, the other team was just in such a rhythm from earlier in the game, they weren't able to complete the comeback. When UNC gets out early, though, and establishes their rhythm on offense, it does make things easier on the defensive end. You're not putting as much pressure on yourself to get stops. You're not putting as much pressure on yourself on the late game possessions. It was great to finally get a 15-point win. I now coming into Saturday, it's going to be interesting because with playing at Virginia, always scary, which I'm sure Joel can talk about that a little bit. But it's What scares me the most is that Virginia just shot like 32-16 splits against Virginia Tech, which inevitably means they're going to shoot 60-40 splits against Carolina, which sucks, but that's just
right.
shooting variance for you.
No, let's not say that.
Let's get, yeah,
Oh,
I don't, dude,
no.
this could be clipped in. Well, Joel, we actually do have we have a bit of a recurring theme on our show where every game that it started with Jacob picking UNC to lose in the 10-game winning streak, like genuinely thinking we were going to drop these games, and then Carolina would just win them. So we always have him pick UNC to lose now.
See,
But
I started a
we
jinx.
got to use the reverse jinx
I
wisely.
started a jinx because I picked UNC over UConn, and then I doubled down and picked them over Kentucky. Lost both those games, and ever since then, I've officially banned myself from predicting UNC wins.
What did you do against Georgia Tech? Did you say Carolina was gonna lose?
I don't even
No, I
think
don't even.
we didn't. You can't like abuse the power of the reverse jinx. So I don't even know if we did picks for the Georgia Tech game because we were like, yeah, unless Miles Kelly goes off, Carolina's winning that game. And of course, Miles Kelly torched them. But with this Virginia game, though, like again, maybe you can go back and laugh at me for this. I don't think they have the firepower to compete with Carolina, even in JPJ. I think that RJ, whoever, we don't have any Virginia fans that are going to listen to this and clip it and send it to Virginia anyway to get them more fired up. But whoever Isaac McNealy is guarding, whether that's RJ, whether that's Elliot Cadeau, both of them got to be looking at him like this is food. It's lunchtime. I'm about to feast. Ryan Dunn scares me. I think Ryan Dunn's one of the best defenders in the country. But aside from him, like, I just feel like this is a if this Carolina team is who we think they are, and that's a team that can make a Final Four, that can win a national title, that's gonna get a one or a two seed, that is projected the highest two seed right now, they need to handle business and think this is the year that the streak ends. I mean, Virginia, I think, is back in the 50s on KenPom. We've seen them get blown out a couple times this year. This is not like the Malcolm Brogdon teams that Joel was playing against, or even the Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome teams you played against. But what are you looking for in this matchup, Joel?
First of all, those teams were ridiculous for Virginia. By far the best teams that Tony Bennett, one of the best teams that Tony Bennett had at Virginia. But I'm like you guys. I mean, Virginia, this is a year that they don't scare me as much from an offensive standpoint. Like I tell people, you don't put points on the board for stops. You know, you put bo points on the board to score the ball. That's how you put points on the board. And they find a lot of times they're not doing that. And their usage rate on Reese Beekman is like through the roof, man. They depend on him for so much for him to play make. And when they're not, their other guys aren't making shots. Now he becomes the shot maker, and that's not necessarily his game. Like his game is very mid-range. You know, he gets to the basket, but he's really a distributor, and makes really good passes. So forcing him to be a scorer is almost it almost plays right into your hand, and just stopping the other guys. So you know, luckily or for them, you know, they're playing at home, so that helps, you know, where the crowd gets pumped up because a shot clock violation or you know, a turnover instead of a three going in or something. But you know, I think that plays right into their hand or kind of helps them a little bit. But yeah, man, this team doesn't it, they don't scare me as much, but they're when their defense is on and when they're making shots, they can be scary. But I just don't see them stopping Carolina that much with the offensive power that they have. Like Jacob said, you know, they can put 90 on your head. Now it probably won't happen because of the lack of possessions, but you know, still, if they score in the 70s, that's almost like 100 versus Virginia. So Carolina can do that, and I just think that it'll be hard for Virginia to get that amount of stops, and then being able to put enough points up on the board.
Yeah, I think the key is really Cadeau, because you, like you mentioned, the lack of possessions, the way they're going to take the air out of the ball. Cadeau, I think we've seen points of the season where he's been so poised under pressure. I always go back to that Tennessee game where it didn't matter how much Ziegler or Vescovy was hounding him. I think it was really Ziegler a couple times was in his grill, and Cadeau would just put a dribble move on him and get by him. Zero turnovers that game, but you know we saw some bad ones against Syracuse. I think he had five that game. There was, or maybe it was Miami. He had five against Miami. Had a couple questionable ones against Virginia Tech as well. He's got to take care of the ball, especially if he's got Beekman on him, because you know Beekman's going to be the one trying to get those run outs, like the few times you see Virginia like actually move quickly or on those Beekman run outs. And yeah, so he's got to be ready to counter that. But and then Ingram, I think Ingram's got to make at least two threes, hopefully three or four would be huge to shoot over that pack line. But
Yeah,
JK, is there any, oh, go ahead.
that's the thing. Sorry, I just, you know,
No, you're good.
with Virginia's defense, the one thing you don't want to do is get lulled into playing one on one, especially coming off the ball screen. Like they hedge the screen so hard that you've already created an advantage. So now you just need to lift the guards up and get the ball out of your hand. And I think that plays well into what Cadeau does because he doesn't over dribble. Like if he sees an open man, he does pass the ball. So it's just making it an emphasis to get the ball out of your hand. Now just play, you know, 4-on-3 from there, and take advantage of already creating advantage from a pick and roll situation.
Yeah, and like you, I mean, Armando's been passing the rock very well recently. Let him cook a little bit on the short roll, see what we can do there. But JK, what are you looking for out of this matchup? How do you think Carolina gets a win?
First off, I think Armando's gonna have a field day. Like they're small. They play a four guard lineup. Jordan Miner's only 6'8". I mean, Armando can go over the top basically anytime he gets the ball in the post. Like he's been great, 25 and 12. Basically, ever since the Duke game, Armando has been pretty dominant. I mean, he's had a couple performances, but like he's been back to ACC Player of the Year contention level Armando, which is the Armando that this team needs. So I think Armando has to have a field day. They only play like two bigs most of the time in their rotation. They play so many guards. So that's going to be key. I also think like I just this game would be one of those games where if UNC did lose, I would start to get concerned simply because, I know I joke about the shooting variance and how they're gonna go off against UNC. Like, this team hasn't scored 50 points in the last two games. I mean, realistically, you can go back since January 20th, they've only scored more than 63 points like twice. It's pretty bad. So, I mean, this is a game where even if UNC has an off night on the offensive end, I think their defense is good enough to where it's not really going to matter. Like, if UNC scores 66 plus points, I think they'll win pretty comfortably. Like, I mean, this Virginia team just they struggle offensively, and I also think it's one of those things where once again, the start's going to tell us a lot. Like, if UNC comes out and can get up 10 points early in this game, then it's easy because Virginia already can't score. Put them in a situation where they have to come back and they have to play faster. They have to allow for more possessions. Like, they're going to be done for. So I think the key for UNC is come out the gates fired up. Put your foot on Virginia's neck early. Get the ball down to Armando. They don't have an answer for him in the paint. And once they, I'm assuming once Armando has a couple easy buckets, they'll probably start doubling or at least hard hedging or playing extreme amounts of help on the weak side. That's when you start to, get Ingram and Cormack and those guys wide open looks. I mean, I think there's a lot more ways that I see UNC winning this than there are that I see UNC losing this. Let's just say that.
Yeah, and you saw like Virginia Tech killed Virginia in the paint, and Lynn Kidd has gotten a lot better this year, don't get me wrong, but he's not Armando. And I think they can really take advantage of having a guy like Jordan Minor who's not a shot blocker. Even when Blake Buchanan comes in, I mean, he's a freshman, you know. That's barbecue chicken right there. You know, you want him in the game. And I even think when Jalen Washington is there, if and we can't forget the Jalen Washington's like come out party was last year when Armando got hurt and he came in and had a very impressive game. So I think even taking advantage of him in the paint as well, just with the lack of size and the lack of shot blocking ability, I think that can be an area where Carolina can really be dominant.
Yeah, I got to bring up one factor playing at JPJ. Joel, I don't know if this will get you in trouble with the network, but refs and JPJ, man, like in some ways it's like they get just as many calls at home that like Duke does or Kansas. Honestly, hey, because we do, we acknowledge our fandom, but we'll be unbiased. UNC gets a pretty favorable whistle into Deendom. They've gotten a
Oh
favorable
yeah,
whistle.
everyone does at some point, at some
But
point.
it's just in JPJ, it's like whether it's the moving screens and the blocker mover or whether it's just like how physical they allow Virginia to be. I just hope that it's not like Elliot Cadeau gets two fouls within the first, 7 minutes or something. Same with Armando. But yeah, Joel, was there, go back to like your junior year that your Carolina won the Natty. I think that game in Charlottesville, Kyle Guy came off the bench and hit like four or five threes or something. He just went, that was sort of his coming out party. Do you remember, like, do you have any good stories playing in Charlottesville or any of the ways that it was like, just speak to the way that that crowd is challenging or just why it's a place that Carolina hasn't won in since 2012?
Yeah, I was going to say I have no good stories from Charlottesville. I want to stay out of Charlottesville because every time we went in there, we had no luck at whatsoever. It's just so hard, man. Like playing against their defense, sometimes it can almost feel like there's 10 guys out there. In practices when coaches throw a six or seven player out there, which was the worst practices because I'm like, Coach, this isn't realistic, man. Why are you doing this? It makes no sense. But that's how it feels against Virginia. And so with that, and then all of a sudden you let them get a couple of stops, they score baskets. That crowd gets involved. It gets rowdy in there, man. But I had no good moments in JPJ, and we've had some good moments against Virginia, but there are no good moments with Virginia because you know that just the lack of possessions, you have to be very efficient, and effective in everything that you do. You can't have any ineffectiveness with what you're doing. And I think that puts a lot of pressure on your preparation and just going in there, going into that game. So yeah, man, I wish I had more, but all I can do is just talk about how hard it is because I didn't even win at JPJ. So
Hopefully that changes this Saturday. Like I said, it's time to see that streak end. But
right.
let's go ahead and get into some of these mailbag questions. Had a several of them sent in on Twitter, and all of us can weigh in on some of these. Some of them are Joel specific, but then I had a few that were DM'd to me as well that I can read. But let's go ahead and get it kicked off with Tristan Freeman at HoopsNut351, friend of me and Jacobs. He writes for Bustin' Brackets, does some content for the Field of 68 as well. Tristan asks this: which kind of guard is more annoying slash difficult to defend? A guy that can make 45% from three, or one that loves to get to the basket all the time?
Oh, that's a good one. I think the hardest one is probably a guy shooting 45% from the 3-point line. The only reason why that's what it was, right? 3-point line. Yeah, that's hard because help side then becomes a lot harder because all coaches, you got to be at the midline if the ball is on the other side of the floor, or even if it's on the strong side, your lack of help is you can't help as much. And then on a closeout, it has to be a really hard closeout to the point where you might have to get off your feet just to run them off of the line. And now all of a sudden that person becomes a driver or, either for themselves or getting someone else involved by, pulling over the help side or whatnot. With a guy that can, just get to the basket, I'll just treat him like Rondo. I'm just sitting in there, and I'm able to help a little bit more, give help to, if another team has a dominant postman, being able to help side and not necessarily worry about the 3-point shot. But I will say this, every time a coach has said, you can help off of this guy, he's not a 3-point shooter, that they turn into the best 3-point shooters in the country. So it's a hard thing.
Hey, case in point, JJ Starling against UNC a week ago.
Exactly. Yep. Point proven.
Banking in 40 footers. Joel, this wasn't submitted by anybody. I'm curious, who was the toughest guard you ever had a guard? Or I guess you could open up to any player, but like during your time at Carolina.
Oh, that is so hard. I've had 4 years of just straight work sometimes. I think the hardest one for me that I just really like, it really made me question, is Division I basketball for me? Did I make the right choice? Was Terry Rozier my freshman year, when he was at Louisville. So, yeah, I was on a closeout situation, guy that could probably knock it down from the outside. And really thought that he punt gave me a pump fake, drove to the basket. I really thought he was going to the basket and hit a step back. And you guys know how shifty he is. And man, he put me out for 8 weeks after that, man. I tore my groin. So yeah, I think if there's any guard that was kind of tough to guard was Terry Rozier. But I've had plenty of guys. Fox from Kentucky, Demetrius Jackson from Notre Dame, Yogi Ferrell from Indiana, London Perrantes. I could go on and on, but by that time I end, the podcast will be over. So
I just pulled up that game you were talking about from your freshman year. Terry Rozier had 25 points, 9 for 14 from two that night, only 1 for 7 from three.
yeah,
But
so I
yeah.
maybe I wasn't paying attention, but that's what happens when you're a freshman. You got a lot of things going on. You get caught up into the game, and then all of a sudden you end up being out for eight weeks after that. So
Yep. Well,
it happens.
Carolina won the game on I think it was a Marcus Paige game winner, if I'm not mistaken.
It was, yep, off the like high
Off the
off the
glass.
glass. Yep.
I was at that game. I remember seeing Theo Pinson sneaking into La Rez later that night. So I remember.
Sounds about right, and I probably went through the back door, but I wasn't too far, so.
I just remember seeing Theo walk in and look around like, I'm not supposed to, like, not I'm not supposed to be here, but just like everybody knows I'm under 21, but we won, so I'm
Yeah,
out.
right. Oh, that's funny.
All right, let me second question. This one comes from Theater and College Hoops at CBB Theater, great college basketball podcast, friend of ours as well. Says the topic of Tristan Newton being underrated came up in our group chat, which led me to say that I thought Joel Berry was criminally underrated. Joel, did you ever feel underrated?
Always. The reason why is because my game wasn't flashy. I wasn't a high riser. I wasn't a shifty, type of player. I was a winner. Everything that I did was effective. It wasn't sexy, but it got the job done. And I think that's what, that's what I prided myself on. I didn't need to be the guy trying to do, three or four dribble moves. But I also think that's why I was so effective was because I knew how to play with other great players. And I think that's the biggest difference. Especially like I think about like training. Like when I was growing up training, I never trained doing all of these combo moves just to get into my shot. Because when you look at the course of a game, when does that really happen? Unless you're just at a, up under 10 seconds and you just need to go get a bucket. But majority of the time, you're playing against guys that are just as good as you are, maybe even better. But it works together, and I was just very effective in being able to catch and shoot situations, or being able to beat the defense down the court with my speed, or being able to get into the paint with a floater. But majority of it was just working off of the guys that I was playing with. So underrated just because I wasn't the sexiest, but it's sexy because I got the job done. I had the guns out always, and it was just very effective,
Yeah, that's like honestly, man, just from our perspective as a you're like my biggest memories of you at Carolina were just kind of getting your head down, getting to the rim, and then hitting big shots from three, not necessarily like Euro step in or necessarily putting the dude on skates, but just like being a badass and getting to the rim, like winning
Right,
games.
right. Playing below the rim. That was me,
All right, this next one comes from Albert Tucci at Tucci228. And this is actually one of the mo one of my favorite questions that I've seen. So one first part is, if the transfer portal was around when Joel was playing, what opposing player would he try to recruit to play with him at Carolina?
Ooh. In my time?
Yeah, like in 2016, 2017, going into your senior year in 2018.
A player that I would have tried to recruit. Man, that's a tough one. I don't know. Probably maybe a Bam Adebayo, because of how effective he was. Maybe a Marvin Bagley. Trying to think. Can't. It's hard to think of, man. I play so many good players out there.
I'm just looking at based on how Carolina recruited ACC players to transfer in conference this year. I was thinking, like, who could Carolina have poached from some of those Notre Dame teams that were really tough to be like, yo, y'all are going to Elite Eights. That's cool. Come win a title at Carolina. Like, what if y'all had poached like Zach August? Zach, I can't remember how to say his last name. Zach August? Zach August? That dude
Oh,
was
Zach August?
Zach, yeah, number 30, that big dude they had.
He was a good player, but I don't know. I don't
Oh,
know about that one. I think he was just
Shoot, the guy from Notre Dame that comes to mind for me is freaking Bonzi Colson,
okay.
Bonzi
Bonzi
Colson.
would have been tough. Bonzi would have been tough. I
He
apologize
was
for suggesting Zach
ridiculous in
August
college.
instead.
Bro, Bonzi Colson was cold, man. Like, I don't even know how to describe. Like, if you told me to put out a scouting report on his game, it was just like he just made shots. I mean, and it didn't matter what type of shot it was. He always made shots. That dude was cold, man.
All I remember about Bonzi Colson was that he was 6'6", but every game they talked about his ridiculous wingspan and how athletic he was. And it just, I don't know if I ever watched a Bonzi Colson game where he had less than 20 points. He just absolutely cooked in college.
I'm telling you, man, it was crazy at the, at the 4 or 5 spot at 6'6", which is wild. I probably Notre Dame, I probably would have tried to recruit Pat Connaughton.
Oh, Pat Connaughton would have been
That'd have been a good
tough.
one too.
I got a
Yeah,
good
Pat Con.
one.
Yeah,
I
what
was
is
gut
it?
Montrezl Harrell, North Carolina
Oh.
native. You can't like he would have been such a perfect Roy Williams big. Like, how did I don't even know if Carolina recruited him, but just I remember watching him play at Louisville and knowing I think he's from Tarboro and just being like, how did this dude not end up in Carolina Blue?
Yeah, I think honestly, him going to Louisville kind of, I think that was perfect for him because of Rick Pitino's demeanor. And Montrez was like the Montrez that everyone knows is, crazy and just high energy. I think he needed a guy like Rick Pitino who can match that craziness, to kind of calm him down a little bit. But that he would have been someone else that could have definitely been effective in Coach Williams' system.
I had one more, Jacob. This one will speak to your heart. PJ Dozier, I think he's another North Carolina native. You can't
Yeah.
tell me that, they get to the if it's in today's era, they get to the Final Four, the same year Carolina does. All their players are going to get poached by bigger programs offering better NIL, and I think PJ Dozier would have been fun at Carolina.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, he was pretty good, man. Just big guard, could see the floor. Didn't shoot it from the outside, but just being able to use his speed to be able to get down the court. I think he would have been pretty effective.
JK, you got anybody who you would have liked to see Carolina
Shoot, you just
poach?
reminded me with the South Carolina drop. So the reason he said that would hit close to my heart, Joel, my dad went to South Carolina, so I kind of
Okay, okay.
grew up watching some Gamecock athletics. But now I'm a fan of the real Carolina because I went there. But that's a conversation for a different day, Dad, if you're listening. I'm sorry, but you just gave me another good one. A Joel Berry, Sendarius Thornwell backcourt would have been absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, that dude was tough, man.
He was
He was so
ridiculous.
good.
Dude, that
Yeah.
March run was crazy.
Crazy. I did not. It was weird seeing them at the Final Four, to be honest. It was very weird, because no one expected them to be there. But man, that dude played with a lot of heart, man. Just another guy that, like, wasn't sexy, anything sexy about his game, but he was just like, he was very hard nosed. You knew every day he was going to show up and play really hard, and just got the job done and was part of the reason why they got to the Final Four. But yeah, I would have loved to play with him, man. That would have been a tough backcourt. You talk about two hard nosed guys that like to get after it.
Was there
Yeah.
anybody that you played with in Florida that you would have tried to recruit to Carolina in the portal era?
I probably off the top of my mind would have been Grayson Allen, but I mean he was over at Duke. So I don't know if he was leaving there. D'Angelo Russell, I would have tried to get him to come instead of going to the league after his freshman year, because I thought at Ohio State, like, obviously he did his thing, but I would have probably tried to get him to come over and say, look, man, you got the talent. Come over here and win the national championship. So, yeah, those are two Florida guys. I know D'Angelo's from Kentucky, but he spent most of his time in Florida out at Mount Vernon. So, yeah.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
As you guys know by now, we've partnered with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for the listeners and the viewers of the Field of 68 as we all get ready for the best month of the year, March Madness. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, you can use the bonus code FIELD150 and you will get $150 in free bets on your first wager with BetMGM, regardless of whether or not you win that first bet. Here's the best part. All you need to do is deposit and bet $5 of your hard-earned money. This is how you make it work. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using the bonus code FIELD150. That's FIELD150. Deposit at least $5 and place your first wager on any game. You will receive up to $150 in bonus bets regardless of the outcome of your bet. Just make sure you use that bonus code FIELD150 when you sign up. And remember, BetMGM is now available in one wallet in select states. As a New Jersey resident, this is super convenient when I have to go cover games in Philly or New York, which happens quite a bit. When you cross state borders, you just log into your existing account and fire away. You don't have to create a new account in each state. It's easy, it's simple, and it's clean. And most importantly, we have some fun stuff coming up for the conference tournaments and for the NCAA tournament. Bet insurance tokens, college hoops odds boost, and my personal favorite, a nice little parlay boost here and there. So download the BetMGM app and sign up today.
Yeah, and the second part of Albert's question after the portal question was, how did you keep those ankles intact during the 2017 tournament run? People forget, two bad ankles.
It was a struggle, man. Like, it was like I had my cell phone and I had my trainer on speed dial, because every morning that was my first phone call, because I couldn't get out of bed. Like, I literally had him come and work on my ankles when I was laying in bed. Now, I was the type of dude, I didn't like to sleep with clothes on. So obviously I had to get up and get some clothes on before he came in there. But yeah, man, I had to. That's the only way that I got through the tournament, man. After the first weekend in South Carolina, or like during that weekend after our first game when I rolled my ankle against Texas Southern, I actually had to drive to Charlotte that night and go see a chiropractor, just to be able to get ready for the next game against Arkansas, which I knew, like, I had to be ready for that game because it was a dog fight. And so thankful we won that game. But yeah, it was a struggle. A lot of medicine taken during that time, like waking up in the middle of the night, having to make sure that I was just keeping it going and going. You know, not a lot of practice time, just a lot of time just really trying to keep my ankle as warm as possible. And so, yeah, man, it was tough, because it was a lot of late hours just trying to get my ankles to go. So not ideal, but it ended up working out at the end. tough, man. Tough.
We can next question comes from Jamie Yant at DubJR8. Says, Joel's jersey definitely deserves to be in the rafters with the way he played in the 17 Final Four on two sprained ankles. But does he feel like Kennedy Meeks' jersey should be up there somehow as well with how he played in that Final Four?
Yeah, you know, first off, I want to say, you know, I Kennedy Meeks was such a huge part of what we did, and was just phenomenal in the Final Four. When you look at, you know, some of the plays that kind of saved us down in the stretch, you know, Oregon getting that offensive rebound after I clanked two free throws, on multiple occasions. You know, being him and Theo getting those rebounds, and then just the going up against, I want to say his last name is Karnowski, the big guy from Gonzaga.
Oh yeah, Shemet Karnowski.
Yeah, going up against him, battling him down low, going against Jordan Bell. Like, you know, he has some really good guys that he had to show up and take it to those matchups. So should his jersey be up there? Yes, we could make a case for that. For me, you could look at it from the same side. You know, in that Gonzaga game, knocked down some big time threes at the end of the game. You know, we were Gonzaga. Jacob, to your point, Carolina, typical slow starts. and I had a 4-point play to get everything going. You know, so you can look at it both ways. And honestly, you know, I'm a dude of faith. I feel like whatever God has ordained for you, that's what ends up happening. And you know, I don't do any type of comparison or anything. He put me in those moments. He put me in those situations for a reason. And I leave it all up to him and give thanks to him because he's the one that made it happen. So, yeah, man, that's a long-winded answer, but you know, you can look at it from the same side. You know, a lot of guys with a team like ours, we had a lot of guys in different moments that stepped up and had big moments. Could you say Luke May should be in the rafters? Probably wouldn't be in the championship if it wasn't for him hitting that last second shot. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Another question, I'm looking for where it was, who responded to it. Someone asked, what was the most tense moment in the tournament run? Now I can't find the question.
I see it. It's from Tar Heel at UNC Is Family asked the most tense moment during the 2017 tournament.
I think we all know what the most tense one is. Do y'all know which one I'm going to go with?
Personally, for me as a fan, I thought the Arkansas game was more tense than even when Malik Monk hit that, like, that shot with like three dudes on him. But one would you say, Joel?
That's the one I was going. I was just curious to see which one y'all think because of the Arkansas.
What would you say, JK, before we.
God, see, I don't know, man. It's tough. Like, it'd be so hard to not guess Kentucky just because like the gravity of that moment and just how insane, like, you're playing against a team that has three dudes who are all really good NBA players, and in college, like, Malik Monk was basically unguardable, so just watching him hit that shot, I froze. But on the other hand, I was like, hold up. This is the redeem team. This is too perfect because it was a very similar shot to the one Marcus Paige hit. So yeah. I'm like, wait, who's going to be our Chris Jenkins? And it ended up being Luke May.
Yeah, great question in that moment. I'm surprised you were able to keep your composure and think about that because in the moment, I was like, What just happened? Because we really had that game. Like, it
Carolina was up 10, weren't we?
Yeah,
something like that. We had that game, and it was like the reason why it was tense for me was because I rolled my ankle again, and I went past the bench, and I said, Coach, I think I'm done, and I think there's a pitcher out there with his hand like on my back, and I just really like I really thought it was done, And I went to the back and I popped some meds, man. Told you it's the medicine that kept me going. I popped some meds. I gave it like 5 minutes and I got up off the table. And I felt like a new man. So got back in there. Stillman White held it down, which was awesome. And then like just the intensity throughout that whole game was there. And then we get to the end. We're thinking, all right, we got it, guys. Then all of a sudden Malik went back to earlier that year in Vegas. And just started hitting everything. I mean, the whole team started hitting everything. I think did they miss a shot in like the last minute or so? I don't think so. And then, you know, obviously thank God for Luke May. And then thank God for Theo Pinson having the composure in that moment to like find Luke wide open. Mm-hmm. If it was me, I was getting ready to take some crazy shot. So just thankful for those two guys. But by far the most intense game for me.
Yeah, going back and looking at that box score, Stillman only I remember those big Stillman White minutes. Only played five, but had a bucket and a couple rebounds in that. And I feel like I want to say his bucket was like a reverse lay or something. It was not was. Like a
like a backdoor cut or something for a reverse layup.
And De'Aaron Fox was shooting like 26-27% from three, I want to say, and he made a huge one in the corner to cut the deficit. Like Kentucky, I mean, I think that Monk and Fox backcourt was probably the best we've seen in college basketball the past decade. When you look at the NBA careers, it's insane they had those two together. And like, I mean, Bam was nowhere near, I think, where he is now with his trajectory, with how he sort of made himself like a point big. But I mean, he was still kind of that guy at Kentucky. But I always go back to that Arkansas game because I want to say Arkansas went up 8 with like 4 minutes left. And I remember watching him being like, man, at least we won the ACC regular season, I guess. Like, but I remember Justin got a stop and Justin got back on defense and was like, or maybe Justin got a bucket and then got back on defense and was like pumping the crowd up. And I was like, okay, if Justin thinks we're going to win, maybe Carolina's really about
to do. Maybe we got something, right? Yeah, no, that game was intense, man. It was, we thought it was like, we didn't expect Arkansas to come out and play like that. Obviously we knew they had some bucket getters with Macon. And I forget the other guy's name, the guard.
Dusty Hannahs or Jalen Barford,
Jalen Barford.
Okay, yeah, Barford, and yeah, he Dusty, was tough.
Yeah, Dusty was really good too, and really good in the G League, by the way. But yeah, man, it was crazy. And then like I had a call where it could have like borderline been a travel, but I think the refs were on our side. We can't have this one seed getting knocked out right now. We got to move these guys on. So I'm thankful for the refs in that situation too. But yeah, that way you can put that game down just because it was so early on and no one was expecting that. So
I also remember Moses Kingsley just being like so annoying to play against.
Oh yes,
God Almighty, he was everywhere. I mean,
this was. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry,
there was so much talent in that tournament. It's genuinely pretty nuts, to be honest. Like, you go back and look, the amount of NBA guys that were on the court at any given time in that tournament, it was one of the great ones. I mean, like, that Final Four was also perfect because, you know, you North Carolina, like, you guys were the team that was kind of supposed to be there. And then Oregon was like the really talented team that nobody really knew if they'd make it to the Final Four, but they knew they were at least a second weekend team. Then you had Gonzaga, which was the other team that was supposed to be there. Then you had the absolute shocker in South Carolina. And it was just like, both of those games in the Final Four were so good. And then the national championship was obviously ended on a perfect note. So, I mean, that tournament, that's one of the more fun tournaments that I can remember watching.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah. I thought the previous year was pretty fun too. I look back at that team. Josh Hart, Archer Diacono, Jalen Brunson, Mikael Bridges, just all those guys are Jalen Brunson, Mikal Bridges are talented. Josh Hart is crazy. You know, Archie Diakono is hanging around in the league. Like,
and that's not even talented. Mentioning Phil Booth, who had 20 points in the title game.
The Villanova Knicks, man.
Yeah.
It's I did want to say something. Obviously, you got to ask about that. Like, please just give us like a little walkthrough rundown of everyone's reaction and what happened after that shot. Because obviously that's just like, it's heartbreaking, because it's heartbreaking as a fan. So I can only imagine the heartbreak you feel as a player in that moment, especially with it being Marcus, who's like been your backcourt mate. Like, it's his last year. You know, walk us through how everything went after that shot went in.
Yeah. Well, I will start off by saying, I even like when it pops up on the screen, I got a daughter. She's starting to really understand everything. And like, I have to explain to her, you know, she's seeing the confetti and I'm like, no, that's one of daddy's worst moments. So I hate having to explain that every March Madness. Probably will have to the rest of my life. But I will take you guys through, like, even before the moment. Marcus hits that shot. First off, I almost turned over the ball. I forget what was the big guy's name?
Might have been Ochefu. Was that him?
Or something. Something along those lines. I throw a pass and he almost steals it because they switched 1 through 5. But it also led to Marcus being able to have the opportunity to get the shot off. So it kind of worked out perfectly. So he does that crazy shot. I didn't realize what type of shot it was until I watched it after the fact. I just saw it go in and everyone was like, it was like one of those moments where you don't, like, you just like, it's like an awkward celebration because you did not expect it to go in. So we call a timeout. We all go to the huddle. We got like this new life. We're like, guys, this go into overtime. We got this. We got the momentum and everything. So we go back on the court. Everyone's talking. We're making sure we're getting in our spots. Ball gets in. I didn't realize Ochefu, whatever his name is, I didn't realize he was setting the screen. He was setting the screen at an awkward angle. Like, he was in the corner at the half court line. Like, what is he doing? But I didn't realize it. I was just guarding Archer Diakono. I stop him. Bryce Johnson is hanging out in the paint. And I stopped Archer Diakono with the help of Isaiah Hicks. And Jenkins gets the ball. And he's wide open. And I'm like, I'm a basketball player. I'm like, this guy is wide open. No hand up. He's walking into this. I think this might be a good shot. This dude, it goes up in the air. And I'm just looking at it. And I'm like, you know when you see a shooter, you're like, That's good. And it went in, man. And I swear, as soon as it went in, it was like the rim had like this confetti sensor. Soon as it went in, like, the confetti was all over my face. I'm like, hold on, who upstairs knew that this was getting ready to happen? It kind of felt rigged, to be honest. But no, man, it was such a crazy moment. And all I could just, like, I didn't even know where to walk. Like, I didn't know to go shake hands. I didn't know, like, I just kind of felt lost with all the, and then you got all this confetti falling over you. So you're kind of like, you can't see. So I just walked back to the locker room, man, and devastating moment. So I had to walk y'all through what I was going through.
I always think about that. Like, whether it's the Super Bowl, whether it's March Madness, like, that's got to be the most demoralizing thing ever as an athlete, to be the opposing team that loses and just have the other team's colors in confetti drowning you, essentially. Like, it's, why can they not at least just wait until the team's like cleared off the court? Because
the next year when we won it, the confetti didn't drop until like we were on the stage and the team was already off. And Coach Williams went up to the people and they were like, what are y'all doing? Last year, y'all didn't waste any time. It was like, y'all knew the shot was going in. Now we win and y'all want to wait for the confetti. What are we doing here? So yeah, I don't know what the deal was with that, but it was kind of
Justice for
crazy.
the 2017 team. Give them their confetti on time.
Give it to us on time.
NCAA owes
Hey.
you a box of confetti at your doorstep.
Right. That's what
Confetti
I'm
gate.
saying.
Confetti gate.
Confetti gate is what y'all didn't know y'all needed.
Right. With that, like at that point, we knew the game was won. You know, we had hit free throws, so get the confetti ready. It's like somehow someone knew something we didn't know. So
Hey, how did you going off of that with like, I mean, just yeah, the emotions of losing in that fashion. How did I don't even know, have a good way to ask this question other than like, how did y'all rebound? How did y'all do it? I can't believe like at the time, I think Carolina fans, we've been spoiled. I mean, shoot, Carolina's won five national or four. Let me think, four national championships in my lifetime and competed for like six, seven. I can't. Anyway. Like we're used to just thinking UNC is going to be right back there. Like in the moment, I don't think I was on Franklin Street after that win, and I don't know if I realized the gravity of how insane it was that Carolina really lost on a buzzer beater than won it the next year. Like how did y'all do that?
I think that's the thing that kind of just now seeing basketball from a different perspective and how hard it is to get back to that moment. I'm along the same lines. Like, it's not easy. I think a lot of people think just because you have that across your chest or these big time schools that it's all of, you know, it's a given to be able to get back to that point, even if you bring back the same roster. I won't go into detail about it, but we saw what happened to Carolina last year. So that kind of makes it to where, you know, it's like, okay, it's not easy to do that, even if you have some of the same pieces back. How we were able to do it was we just had a bunch of guys that bought into what it is that we wanted to accomplish. And I think like before I got there and my whole thing of going to Carolina was I wanted to win a national championship. Like that was the one thing that I wanted to do, no matter what, like forget my jersey being in the rafters, forget being like winning the Maui Invitational, forget being the MVP of the ACC tournament. Like, I didn't care about any of that. I just wanted to win a national championship. And Theo Pinson was the same way. Justin Jackson was the same way. Nate Britt had to be that way, especially after the year prior when your brother hits the game-winning shot to win a national championship. Now you have to get one for those Thanksgiving dinners to kind of, you know, to kind of neutralize the crap talk. But everyone on the team wanted to win a national championship, and I think that was the difference. So we went into that year not caring who got the credit, who wanted to, you know, anything that we wanted to do personally, we knew we wanted to get back to that point. And like we got back to campus, man, we took like 2 weeks off. And before the coaches wanted us to take a little bit of time off because of what happened. And we were already back in the gym before they even told us to get started. And that's when I knew like, okay, we're locked in. And so throughout the whole year, we just kept the main thing. So, and we knew where we wanted to get.
Yeah, great insight. And kind of going off that, I had a couple more questions, then we'll close it down. But
Oh, yeah.
this one comes from Brian Smith at B Smitty 2322. Ties into the 2017 season. If you could take one player from the 2017 team and put them on this current team, who would you choose? And you are eligible to choose yourself if you so please.
Take the 2017 and put it on this year's team. I would go with myself because of my competitiveness, but they already have someone who, you know, is making good things happen. So I'll go with someone else. I'll probably say Justin Jackson. Just because they need a guy at that three spot that can go get a bucket when you need to have a bucket, but do it in a different way. And what I mean is putting pressure on the rim. Justin didn't necessarily have to get to the rim because of his, you know, being 6'8", and being able to get to that floater, but he also had the 3-point making ability to spread the defense out. And I just think you get a score with someone with a little bit more size than what they have right now. And I think they could use that at that three spot.
JK, who would you pick?
My answer would probably it'd probably be Justin as well, just simply because, I mean, you look at it, think about the starting five, and you know, I don't think this is a knock on Cormack at all because of who Justin Jackson is as a player, but an RJ, Cadeau, Justin Jackson, Ingram, and Bacot starting five is just
That sounds nice.
insane.
Cutting the
Like,
nets.
especially because Justin Jackson used to have one shot in his bag that I never understood how he hit every time. And it was like the 13-foot one-handed floaters he would stay taking from a corner angle. And I never understood how he always hit that shot.
Like, to the point where it was so automatic, like he could do it as his like a free throw attempt and it go in. That's how automatic it was sometimes, which is crazy. I look back some of the clips like from the Gonzaga game. He was like, all momentum would say this dude is going out of bounds, and he just throws it up and it goes in. So I'm right there with you.
Justin was going to be my pick, especially if you get like the Justin with the defensive aptitude he played in the tournament run. I feel like he and Harrison Ingram on the wings, just being able to come up with a, I mean, you have Justin who was taking out Tyler Dorsey, in tournament games, and Ingram is so good at using his length to get blocks and steals. Like, this would be a scary good defense with that. I would throw in a little bit of love to Isaiah Hicks. I think his ability to having like a true lob threat on the team would really help. I also just love Isaiah Hicks as like a personal favorite because I think he committed to UNC within like 30 minutes of being offered, and he is a true Tar Heel. And I'm so glad, you mentioned the Chris Jenkins hitting the shot over him, but the next year when he had that banked in shot that I think put Carolina ahead for good in the final 2 minutes against Gonzaga. So I got to give Isaiah Hicks some love for sure.
He's one guy, man. If they had cameras, should have been a thing, but like a out of season mixtape, like hoop mixtapes or whatever, and you saw him in pickup over the summer, man, you would have thought that dude was the number one draft pick. It was insane how some of the crap he did during summer times.
I think too, if Isaiah Hicks is, class of 2023 high school prospect, he grows up shooting threes too. And so
Oh
I
my gosh, yeah.
and he because he was a really good free throw shooter, like he had the touch. If he was
And he
born
would
just
hit
to
those during the he would hit those during the summertime, which is like he would back to the basket, turn around off the glass, like hitting all of that during practice. But obviously, sometimes, in the system that you're in, you don't get a chance to do some of those things during the regular season. So, but great picks though.
This was a bonus question from B. Smitty, the same one who asked that question. This is for Joel. How much do you rag on Carlos Boozer for his beard off camera?
I don't have to do it much because Booz does it himself. He knows that incident that he had was he couldn't do that again with the stuff dripping. He knew he couldn't do that anymore. And he talks about it. He was like, man, I don't know. I like at the time the dude told me about it. I said, yeah, that looked fresh, and I did it. And he was like, but when I look back on it now, I'm a light-skinned brother. I can't do that. Maybe a dark-skinned brother can get away with it, but me, I'm too light-skinned. That stuff stands out. So, no, he talks about it all the time. And I'm glad he does because now I don't have to bring it up. He can just bring it up himself and I can get a good laugh out of it. But it is hilarious though, thinking about that. And yeah, I think you ever want to show someone why not to do it? Just pull up a clip of Carlos Boozer and it'll let you know, and he'll let you know if you ever ask him.
JK, did you have any questions you wanted to ask?
I think
I
that
got.
covers just about all of them. I mean, I got to ask most of my questions off of that they kind of tied into other people's questions, so it kind of worked out perfectly.
All right, I got one. We can close with this one. So Joel, you and RJ Davis played 1-on-1 to 11. Let's say you get a three dribble max. What's the score?
Okay. Where are we on the court? Are we in the middle? Are we elbow? Are we?
Let's say you start from the top of the key.
Okay, three dribble max. Man, that's tough. RJ got some. He got some moves to him, man. But you guys know I'm not gonna sit on here and lie to y'all and say I'm not gonna pick myself. That'd be crazy. That would be absolutely crazy. But no, it would be good. I'm gonna go with myself. Just because I feel like, you know, I was able to get my shot off quite a bit. And I've done three dribble max with Kendall Marshall and Theo Pinson, and I won a lot of those. And those are two guys that have really good size. I don't know if RJ has played against other guys and have done that, but we would do that often, and that's the reason why I asked from where, because we would do it. We would do it from the elbow. We would do it from the wing. We would do it from the corner, which is tough because you can really only go one way unless you just, you know, bait somebody going middle and then go back baseline. So we used to play those games often, and I think I'm pretty good with limiting my dribbles and being able to be effective.
What would your tactic be against RJ? How would you attack him with the three dribbles?
I would use my strength. He only has three dribbles. You know, I would be able to keep a hand up, get on his strong side, so he couldn't get up into his shot, and kind of press up in him, but not give him a straight line drive, but kind of direct him, you know, angle him to the outside of the elbow, and use my strength that I have. Because RJ, he's a little guy, you know. He's a little guy compared to me. So I would use my strength to kind of keep him out of the paint with the three dribble max. So it makes it easy for me. You know, he's pretty shifty. So if he
– Yeah, true.
Yeah, if he had unlimited dribbles, you know, it'd be a different ball game. Mm-hmm. I think I could still get to him and compete. But with three dribbles, I would kind of use my strength. I would use the old man tactic, you know, put the body on him.
Hey, we've got to get you back in Chapel Hill this summer then. Get in on some of those pickup actions, and let's see what happens.
I don't know, man. It's like, it's hard to gain and look like the way that I did, but it is so fast to lose it. And I'm walking out of the church sometimes having to take some ibuprofen and Advil, so I don't know about that one. He might be able to get me.
Great questions. Thanks to everybody who submitted. JK, do you want to close with any? You got any ideas for four corners to wrap it up?
Let's see. Four corners. All right, we'll go on the topic of this because we talked about it a little bit off camera. Outside of Duke and UNC, we will exclude them from this conversation. Joel, who are the four best teams in the ACC, which is apparently a four-bid league to the Mountain West six. So please enlighten us on the two next best teams beside Duke and UNC, and then the two teams that, according to Joe Lenardi, have no chance of making the NCAA tournament.
Look, I mean, I didn't want to get into this conversation, but I just want to start by saying the ACC, Mountain West, let's be honest. This whole podcast, we have talked about, you know, some of the great, great players that have come through Carolina. But we also talked about all the great players that are on other teams. And ACC is by far and will always be one of the best conferences in the country. And the Mountain West isn't even close to the ACC. So I'll go ahead and establish that. But to get into your question, the four best teams outside of Duke and North Carolina, I got to go with Virginia. Tony Bennett has been unbelievable with Virginia and what he has done. I will have to go. Are we talking about right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like this season.
I'm going to go with Clemson. I know they had a drop-off coming into league play, but that's a really good team. Like, that's a really good team led by PJ Hall. They have a lot of good pieces, a lot of good length, a lot of shot-making ability. Then I will have to go Wake Forest. They have one of the best probably starting fives in the country. And then Oh, that fourth one's gonna be tough, man. I'm gonna have to go Pitt. I'm gonna have to go Pitt because recently, the way that their two guards in Jalen Lowe and Bub Carrington being freshmen have developed over the season really well, and I just like some of the pieces that they have with some like switchability and some versatility at the four spot with one of the Diaz brothers. And then Blake Henson playing out of his mind. I just like their team. So I'll go with those four: Virginia, Clemson, Wake Forest, and Pitt.
Solid.
Would you change anything to that, JK?
Right now, I don't think I would. I really don't. I mean, I think had you told me before the year Miami wouldn't be a top six team in the ACC, I'd have been like, you're insane, but they look bad. And
They look like they're done.
yeah, they look like they're mentally checked out. But yeah, I mean, I'd say that's the four. I think all four of those teams should be tournament teams. I'm sorry. They should be. Especially like what Pitt's done. I understand Duke was missing guys, but they still went into Cameron and they won. That's a huge win. Wake's just been really good. Virginia's done enough. And then, you know, Clemson's just they come into the Dean Dome and win. And you know, it's Duke had to escape against Clemson. So that's a really good team, man. I agree with those four.
Yeah, I same here. I think Pitt's been playing really well recently. Like you said, Joel, Jalen Lowe is kind of taken off during league play.
Yeah.
I wanted to think Florida State could get there because I mean, I think Jameer Watkins is such a hooper and very has a super versatile game, but they're like a guard or two short. And they dropped too many bad losses. Like, I think they're done. Virginia Tech on the right day can look like a tournament team. I mean, they did against Virginia, but I think they've probably taken too many bad losses at this point. But I don't know. I would say, I guess the only other thing I would add out, I think, I mean, honestly, I'd be shocked if it wasn't one of UNC, Duke, or Clemson that wins the ACC tournament. But I feel like there's a world where we could see Virginia Tech get the auto bid, like just because we've seen Mike Young do that before. He did that 2 years ago with Tech.
Yeah.
And I think their style with being able to make a bunch of threes, like it's conducive to getting really hot for a 3 or 4 day stretch, you know, but.
Yeah, I believe so too. All it takes is one game for you to be good. And I think that's why I'm so about the ACC just being a strong league is because we've seen so many teams at the top that have gone down to, you know, the bottom teams. And, you know, I don't like to put it that way. It's just, you know, that's you got your top and you got your bottom, but I just think we've seen it so much this year that and you're playing on a neutral court and that makes a difference. So I just think in the ACC, all you got to do is like the tournament. You know, all you have to do is win one game and one of those top teams can be out of there just like that.
Right,
So
right. Yep. Great show today.
yeah,
Appreciate all
I
of y'all
enjoyed it,
that tuned
guys.
in. Yeah. Thanks for hopping on, Joel. We'll have to have you back another time. Maybe during the NCAA tournament. We can see if there's a player on this team that can match your lore of getting your ankles worked on before you got out of bed
No,
and fighting
I don't wish that on anyone. I don't wish that on anyone.
somebody. Yeah,
But
hopefully we keep avoiding injuries. Let's
yeah,
stay
exactly.
Carolina's that's a really good injury luck, but yeah, thanks again for being on. I'm Riley. That's JK. Thanks for listening to The Pot is the Roof.